district at this point. I'm going into my 22nd year here. My life before that, I was a clinical social worker, and so a clinician, but also directed multiple programs for a private nonprofit child adolescent family counseling agency on the South Shore. I'm a mom and a nana, so I have three adult daughters, when they know I'm going in to teach the puberty and sexual health lessons, they get very excited about that, and they say, tell kids, you know, we went through puberty and we survived it with you, Mom. And it's more their dad and I survived it. The teen years, I've taught parent education for a number of years, and one of the things that I've noticed when I do for parents of elementary students, you know, they look tired. But when you go to middle school, parents look a little more exhausted. But by the time your kids get to high school, everyone looks exhausted. And I know that I would hear parents say, I can't wait for them to be older because, you know, or go off to college or leave home because my job's done. And in fact, your job gets harder. And that in many ways our kids need us in different ways than they needed us when they were younger. But it was, I would say, a stressful time, those first few years of being away from home. And I was grateful that my husband and I had invested, and even the uncomfortable conversations had them, and that they were regular conversations with our children. And I tell the story about my oldest daughter calling one night and said, Mom, do you mind, I put you on speakerphone, there's a bunch of other students in here, and they didn't have health education, and no one talked to them about decision-making, or, and they're all making stupid decisions, so can you just answer their questions? And I thought, what a privilege to be invited in, and for my kids to really see that their dad and I were trusted adults, that we're going to be honest and direct and struggle with them around health-related decisions that could have small consequences and huge consequences. And so, and they didn't always make good decisions. And, you know, I think it's really important as somebody who's an educator to be able to say that, yes, even as educators, our kids are going to make mistakes, and they're going to make life challenging for us. And that really has to do with their job as adolescents, is struggling and pushing back and experiencing the limits and consequences. And one of my daughters said, Mom, let me make my own mistakes. And I said, you're right. The small ones you can make, but the bigger ones, I'm going to be bugging you, and we're going to have these ongoing conversations about that. And so health education, I also want to point out two of our middle school health educators are here tonight, Molly and Carol, and then you met Christy and Taylor, our prevention specialists for the district. But they do an amazing job. I get to see their classes. Saw Carol's today or yesterday. I can't remember now. I love this quote. There's always that moment in childhood when a door opens and lets in the future. And we see glimmers of that throughout the stages of development with our kids. And having, actually still teaching some of the fourth and fifth grade puberty lessons, seeing those aha moments, and those moments sitting on the carpet, and they're really able to talk about their worries and concerns, and also recognize oh, this is happening to me, or, oh, I didn't think about that in terms of my parent or a family member, and now I know what those period products are. Oh, I got to be nice to my parent who might be having some of the symptoms that you're talking about for people who menstruate. And then this was my dad's quote. When nothing's going right, turn left. So, you know, we're trying one way as a parent, and we're getting more and more frustrated with, but we said, and these are the rules, and these are, and I've learned to just pivot. And it wasn't easy for me as a parent. It's easier as an educator to do that. And then that's the Muppet movies. I don't know if you ever saw in the 70s. I think you can still watch it. It was the Muppet movie, and Kermit and Fonzie the Bear were on a road trip, and Kermit says, go left at the fork, and there was a real fork in the road, so sometimes we feel that way. There's this thing in front of us. So I want to talk about, this is what we'll be covering tonight, and I'm going to move through some of this pretty quickly, but the slides will be sent out so you'll have access to the information. These are just discussion guidelines that I always mention around just taking care of each other and ourselves and making space for everybody to have a voice. And I want to just take a minute. And so I just want to say that I could never have gotten through this alone, and now I get to support my own daughter and her husband around their 4-year-old and 1-year-old. But we really do need each other as our kids go through these changes and through growing up into young adults. And I just wanted to say a few things about health education, because we see it as a partnership with parents and caregivers, that there are certain things that we can do in health education class that is parallel and reinforces the messages, but also gives them accurate information and provides them with the language they're going to need and the information they're going to need to advocate for themselves, to advocate for others, but also that will impact the decisions that they're going to be faced with and are currently faced with. And I also want to just say that we've been working really hard for our students with diverse learning styles and to make sure the curriculum is accessible so any parent who's concerned about their child's ability to participate in health classes should definitely reach out to me, because we work with the classroom teachers, we work with the counseling department and our special education and ELL departments to make that accessible. And that's the same for parents and caregivers. So what are your fears and concerns about health-related issues in your children? Some of you may have written them down on the chart paper. What fears or concerns do you have? Yeah.
That they may not open up to us and bring up something which is bothering them more, that they can speak about. Yeah. And me not picking up the time, let's suppose.
I think that's a pretty common concern. Even I had concerns about that. My middle daughter said to me, Mom, you know how Emily, my oldest daughter, tells you everything? I just want to be really clear, I'm not telling you anything. I go, oh, you are. I'm up for the challenge. And I said, you know, I said, well, you know, and I gave her our address, and I said, do you know why your sister has privilege and she gets a little more freedom? And she said, yeah, because she's older. And I said, well, actually, she's earned my trust. And so we're either going to have to figure out a way to talk about hard things and figure out how to develop that trust, or you're going to get to really know our home address really well. And so it was really just kind of challenging it, but also being clear about with freedom and privilege comes a certain amount of trust and being able to communicate. For her, it was, she wanted, I took advantage of every opportunity when I had to have a hard conversation of her asking to go to the mall. And so in the car right there, we'd have a hard conversation or going to an appointment or something. And she would say, I'm not talking to you about it. And I would say, I feel uncomfortable talking about it, but we have to. And that can be really a challenge. Other fears or concerns? Yeah.
Peer pressure.
Yeah. You all know. We see it every day and talk about it. How about others? Any other fears or concerns? Yeah.
Well, their brain is involved.
Yep.
So their brain may be positive.
Yep.
And what can you do with that?
Yeah. When I talk to kids about decision-making and judgment and talk about nagging adults, I ask kids, how many of you have heard, how many times do I have to tell you? And all the hands go up. And I'll say, do you know why adults are continuously reminding you and repeating things? And they're like, because they're annoying. And I said, yeah, we are annoying. But we also, our job is to keep you safe. And to make and allow you to take risks, but to take healthy risks. Because your brain doesn't fully develop to your mid to late 20s. And judgment, decision making, all of those areas of the brain are the last to develop. And so as a result of that, yeah, we're all going to be nagging. And we're always going to be repeating, you know, those messages and reminding them and giving them consequences and supervising and monitoring them. It's exhausting, but it's so important. Any other fears or concerns? Yeah.
Not really knowing what's going on as they get older and older, right? They're spending more time away from the house. They're driving. They're with their friends. They tell you where they are going to be, like at a party. But what's really going on and what, you know, what's happening at that party? And I've heard some kind of scary things happening at some of these parties.
Yeah. Yeah. When our kids started middle school, we had kind of this agreement, not always on their part, but on our part, that we would call the parents at the house and make sure that someone's going to be there and supervising and monitoring. We would say, and we assume there won't be any alcohol or other drugs, and that kids will be supervised. And I actually had parents say, I can't guarantee that. And so then I'd have to, my husband and I would have a conversation with our kids about, so what do you think we should do about this? When they got older, but also when they were younger, what's your excuse? So if they get in a situation, even though we've done everything we can to protect that, what's their excuse? And we also had a code that they would text me, what do you want? And then I would either call them or text them and say, hey, you got to come home. Or it might be that their excuse was the stomach flu. And I remember my oldest daughter, she was like graduating from college, or I can't remember, but she was in college. She came home and she goes, Mom, either my friends are really stupid or they just think that I get the stomach flu a lot. Because she'd been using that excuse since middle school. And I love that because, you know, it's on them to decide what their excuse is, but they didn't leave the house without kind of, what's your backup plan? What's your excuse? What's our code? And we also, in middle school, asked them to identify another trusted adult and to have that person's phone number in their phone with them. And two of my daughters used that. And they all chose the same couple. who in turn said, "Who do you want?" to their kids who chose my husband and I. And I was so appreciative. One of my daughters was babysitting, and she wasn't driving yet. And I knew the family, was friendly with them, not close friends, but friendly. And they said, "Oh, we'll bring her home." And they came home, and they were intoxicated. And so my daughter called the backup phone, because she knew that I had already said, "You come around." She goes, "Oh, I'm going to sleep over at my friend's house. You know, you can call my mom if you're not sure, but my friend's mom's going to pick me up." And so my friend answered the phone at like 1 a.m. and said, "I hope it's all right, but I'm in my pajamas, and what's the address again?" So she was prepared as well that she could get that call. And I was so proud of her, because I don't know that I would have thought of that. But because of the ongoing conversations and, you know, preparing for different situations, she was able to think on her feet. Not that they always did. There were some times where I was like, "What were you thinking?" You know, those are the types of strategies that can really help. And finding ways to bring up the conversation. Using a TV show or a movie or an article or a book. Or even a conversation, you know, coming tonight. I attended this parent presentation. Those kind of things will help us around those fears and concerns. If you could do me a favor, if you answer yes or agree to this, I know versus do kind of activities, so I'm going to read a health statement, and then, so doctors recommend that the average adult gets 7 to 9 hours of sleep each night. If you answer yes to this, I do get at least 7 to 9 hours of sleep each night. Just raise your hand. My child gets 7 to 9 hours of sleep every night. And then youth education around the risk of STIs, sexually transmitted infections or illnesses, reduces the risk of infections in young people. I have spoken with or plan on speaking with my child about sexually STI prevention. So if you've done that. Regular exercise is good for your physical health. I do get at least 1.5 hour of vigorous physical activity at least 3 to 4 times per week. Okay. My child gets at least 1.5 hour of vigorous physical activity at least 3 to 4 times a week. Well, they do have PE, so you probably just don't know that. And Eamon Sheehan, our coordinator of PE Health and Wellness, is here as well. Use of cigarettes or electronic nicotine delivery devices, marijuana, alcohol, and or other drugs has a negative effect on the health of young people. I have spoken with or plan on speaking with my child about the health risks associated with substance use. Teens who are taught medically accurate, inclusive health education have regular conversations at home and have clear family expectations about health risk behaviors are more likely to postpone their decisions to use drugs and postpone their decision to have sex. I have regular conversations with my child about our family values, our expectations around drug use, sexual decisions, and other health behaviors. Okay. You can see kind of the difference in terms of where we answered yes, maybe where we're not sure, or where we haven't done that yet. And so those are the things that it's not too late, if your kid's in middle school or high school, to talk about those things and say, "Hey, we haven't discussed this, but I want us to talk about it because I know that these are concerns and that we should address them." So this is just the partnership of health education and where we cross. And I'm not going to go through this whole slide because of time, but you'll have an opportunity to look at it. For me, the most important thing is, and probably where there's a difference, is that starting in elementary school, kids are together. And our primary goal, by the time they graduate and they leave home, is that they know how to have responsible conversations, respectful conversations about the different health-related topics, including sexual health, including consent, including how to resist peer pressure. And we want them to be able to have that skill with their peers when they leave us, but even when they're here, actually, not just when they leave, that we know that they can set limits, they can be clear about their expectations, their values, their beliefs, and their boundaries around any of the pressures they're facing, whether that's substance use, whether that's doing something that they're not supposed to be doing, whether that's engaging in sexual activity, any of those topics, that we know that they can have responsible, respectful, and honest conversation with their peers, and they have practiced that skill throughout their time with us in health education. And we are backing up and asking them to, and working with them on practicing those conversations at home. So there are assignments where kids come home and they interview parents about different health topics starting in fourth grade. And so the kids will say, why do I have to do this? Or my parents aren't going to want to talk to me. And I say, what do you have to do to get really good at something? And they go, well, practice. And so we want them to practice, and we also want you to practice having those conversations, not once, but ongoingly. It might be daily, it might be weekly, depending on what's coming up in your home with your kids. But we want them to get really good about coming to you and other trusted adults in their life, because you'll see in a minute that they see you as their number one person that they're going to go to for information. This is just to give you a sense of where we cover health in middle school and high school. You can see in 7th and 8th grade, in 9th and 11th. We're trying to get back in some booster lessons with the 6th grade during wind blocks. But prior to the pandemic, kids saw Christy Demarev, our prevention specialist, and now we have Taylor, we have two. But they would train high school kids to go into all the 6th grade classes and do some lessons on decision-making, peer pressure, and education around vaping and prevention. And this I kind of talked about, but we wanted to access, understand, appraise, apply, and advocate for health information and services. And I have to say that's the number one thing that kids, when they graduate, will reach out to me by email and say, I know y'all talked about this in health class, but I can't remember. Where do I go? Who do I talk to? How do I get access? And even in fourth grade, we're talking about where is it appropriate to talk about this and who with. And we're really enforcing at home with trusted adults at home, but also your doctor and doctors and nurses. So we're really encouraging them when they go in to see a pediatrician, or if they want to make an appointment, that they should do that. One thing that we also talk about in the high school health, and I think a little bit in middle school now, is that we talk about gynecological appointments, and we talk about what happens during that time. And everybody hears it, whether you're somebody with the reproductive or sexual biology of a person with a vulva that's going to do that. We talk about breast and testicular cancer and self-examination, and we have testicular and breasts that have lumps in them, and so they have an opportunity to see what the difference is and what that feels like, and they're pretty amazing. And we've had kids come back after those health classes. I've had two students in my experience here who have come back and said that they actually did the testicular exam and found a lump, and ended up, their dad said, oh, it's nothing, it's probably just a hernia or something. And finally, the kid persisted, and the mom took the student to the pediatrician, and they caught it early. And so that student came in to just tell me, thank you for that education. But those are also things that you can reinforce and talk about at home, and we can provide you resources around that. And I'll also be sending out a resource list of books and websites that are really good resources for parents, but you can also review the websites with your kids. And we also know what the health outcomes are for health literacy, and also what are the risks if kids aren't, they don't have health literacy. And so this is based on data through the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control. So it's not just those of us that are passionate about health, but it's also on the global level and the national level. Those the research and the data supports that. You may have seen in the news that Massachusetts just updated their comprehensive health education framework. I'm not going to go through all of that now, but we were already doing things that, because we were using the national health standards, because the Massachusetts standards, I think it was 1999, that they were updated. And so we weren't really making many changes in our curriculum. I do want to point out that in addition, Department of Elementary and Secondary Ed is advising that we teach, incorporate lessons at the middle and high school age around sexual exploitation, sex trafficking. We already talk about sexually explicit media and pornography and the health impact for kids around that, and the importance of talking to trusted adults about that. But these are some of the content areas that we talk about. We also got curriculum around gambling addiction, and so that's another directive of Department of Elementary and Secondary Ed that we talk about gambling addiction and the health risks associated with that. So you can see we cover all of these things, and we really encourage parents to talk about those things at home as well. Yeah?
Oh, I just see on the content areas 6 through 8, there's a few things that are not included on the 9-12. Do they ever circle back to those things, like the violence and injury?
Oh, actually, I forgot to put that in. So healthy relationships and violence prevention are included. And we do talk about injury prevention. We also weave that into substance use. And the risks associated with that, and we also include violence and sexual violence as well at the high school level. But considering they have kids for one trimester in 7th and 8th grade, it's amazing that they cover what they do with kids, and they have meaningful conversations too with them. Did you have a question? Yeah.
I think you
were going to go to the other. Oh, who else?
Pornography is one thing which, although I don't know what to say, my son wants nothing. Like, he doesn't even want me to open my mouth on a subject. Now, I managed to sneak in all the other ones, right, in those teachable moments, but this one, I don't really know how. He just shut up, kind of thing. So, how do you even broach a subject when your child is like, not ready to discuss it?
Yeah. I think if you already know that, you can say, look, I know you don't want to talk about it. I don't really want to have this conversation with you either, but I have to, because I want to make sure you know, if things come up around this, that I'm somebody that wants you to come to me and talk to me about it. And these are the things that I've learned about it. And these are the concerns that educators have, that parents have, that, you know, the medical profession has concerns about young people accessing and viewing sexually explicit media, including pornography.
So they all do it at some point, I'm assuming.
Yeah, most of them do. There are students that don't. A lot of times, by age 8, a very high percentage of kids have accidentally gone onto a site where there are pornographic images. It is something that even comes up in fifth grade health classes where kids have worries and questions about that and what do they do if they see these images. And so what I tell parents and what we talk about as educators is that if we become aware that a kid is viewing it, either we find out if they don't tell us but we find out, we don't want to shame them, but we do want to say, you know, we do need to talk about it, and these are the reasons why. And I also, you know, as a parent, want to make sure you understand the law, especially if they share images with other people, and even if they think it's private, it's not. And I know if Christina Hankins was here, our resource officer, that she would talk about the situation in which that's happening. But we also, we want to make sure that kids understand that, and kids have seen sexually explicit media when they're gaming online and conversations with other people as young as third and fourth graders. That have been reported, but we want to make sure they understand that those are not images that young people should view, that the legal age is 18. Most of the images that are out there right now that they have access to free are very violent, and a lot of them are directed towards cisgender women and sometimes LGBTQ people in those pornographic and sexually explicit films and pictures. And so sometimes we find in the health classes, especially at the high school level, that they want to talk about it and they really didn't understand the health risks associated with that, or they're worried or concerned about themselves or a friend and they want to know how to talk to their friend about it, or where do they get help, or how do they talk to their parents about what they need. So, you know, kind of monitoring and supervising what they're doing, and just be honest that if it comes up, we're going to talk about it. Yeah.
So I know that they're using proxies to access the website in the school. So my son told me that he saw on someone's laptop while the kid went to the restroom, somebody else came and started some video going through a proxy, so they're all super familiar with how to set up proxies to do everything from playing games online to
on their Chromebook.
Yeah.
So that's a really important thing for a technology department to know.
So
I know I get blocked when I'm doing health. I'm researching an article, I get blocked, and I have to say, hey, it's me again, coordinator of health education. I kind of need to access this. That it may be an article or a resource. And they just laugh now, yep, it's Julie. She's Googling inappropriate stuff, or, you know, the word sex or something comes up. And they, that's just reminding. I'll let tech department know that.
Somebody's setting up proxies. As soon as one gets taken down, another is going up.
Right. Right.
It's like a free service they provide for their friends.
Yeah. I know they're updating right now the system that's gonna make it harder for kids to do that, but hey, they work around it, and but that's really important to know. We'll let them know that. So how many of you are familiar with the Youth Risk Behavior Survey? So this is a biannual survey developed by the Centers for Disease Control and Department of Public Health, Department of Elementary and Secondary Ed, also oversees it in each state, and it monitors the health behavior of middle school and high school students. Our questionnaire is based off the CDC's questionnaire, but Lexington has added additional questions in it, and we're able to track that data over time to see where are the changes in those behaviors, and then we're also able to really look at our curriculum and programming and services based off that long-term data. And we have an outside consultant that works with different states, including Florida, and he said that in the states and the schools in Massachusetts work with that Lexington has the most comprehensive YRBS and the longitudinal data, and also the fact that we use that. That informs our practices and it keeps us up to date in terms of what our kids need. And that includes parent education as well. And so parents can opt their kids out of the survey. We really encourage parents to have their kids take the survey because the larger pool, it's usually a very small group of parents that opt their kids out of it. And the best part is that we work with the teachers in the rooms that are implementing the survey. All the teachers in the two middle schools and the high school read the instructions and are there to support kids taking it. But we've given the teachers in the room also additional information so that they understand why it's important and they can explain that to kids. We also have a number of students that do independent study and internships with us. And so they also educate their peers around the importance of the YRBS. And also our teachers in middle and high school use that data and discuss that with kids and get their feedback about it. And it's also like a focus group where they can talk about their perceptions and things that they're surprised about and things that they've learned about that. Overall, up at the top, if you look, Lexington Youth are doing better than other schools at the state and national level, but it's still not good enough. And so around substance use, bullying, and harassment, and that includes electronic bullying and harassment, and that includes sexual harassment in that, we have, over the last few years, been going in and doing additional lessons on harassment, bullying, and sexual harassment as young as third grade. And we now have diversion services for K-12 around bullying, harassment, and Title IX infractions. And we do, we meet with kids about 8 to 10 times, and we do education. We also do dialogue around those topics related to the incident that they were involved in. And so far, that's been with really good results, as well as diversion services around substance use. So when a kid gets in trouble in school, they are diverted to our services in lieu of suspension or other disciplinary action because we believe in education instead of just punishment in that situation. So through our prevention program, we provide those services, and Taylor and Christy and I do those interventions with students. The other thing about diversion services, they don't have to get in trouble. They can access our services directly, or a parent or a counselor or a teacher can come to us, and we'll meet with kids separately. And those conversations and work is confidential. We don't keep a formal record. We do, provide that curriculum to any kids. Mental health and sexual health, there are some concerns. We were talking about pornography. A little over half of students report viewing pornography. We don't have any middle school data that we wanted to do more education with parents so they understand why they're asking that at the middle school level, because the middle school students we know are accessing it, and we're really worried that if we don't intervene earlier, by the time they get to high school, kids are going to have some real compulsive behaviors and problems around that. So you'll have access to that, and at the top, you'll see that if you click on that, that is the link to the results of the survey, and in that PowerPoint presentation that you can look at, you can go and look at the data in different topic areas. This one's really important to me because who or what has most influenced your decision-making? Parents, guardians, 46.8%. Stress and stress management. Again, parents are number one on all of these things. So even though they act like they're not listening or they don't want to talk about it, they are listening. They're not going to tell you that, but they are listening. And so I love that we're right up there and in competition with other others that might be family or another trusted adult and their friends. We kind of beat up the friends a few times there. And so we know that they're listening in health education. They're also having opportunities to ask us questions about that. There's just some tips for talking to kids about it. If you haven't started yet, start it now. Have some books, have some articles, watch a movie, look at a resource on a computer, and I'll send you those resources. But find different ways to bring it up with them so that they know we're thinking about it and that we care. And we are a trusted adult that we want to, as best we can, not be judgmental or reactive. And sometimes I've said to my kids, okay, give me a moment. I wasn't expecting that, and I just want to take a breath because I'm really glad that you told me that. But just give me a moment before we talk about it. So it's okay to pause if you find something out that your kid has done. And to be thoughtful about how you want to have the conversation, because we have our own experiences that we bring to those conversations with our kids and our own beliefs and values, and we know that there's a challenge out there around the media, around peers, around what they're talking about with their friends, and what they're accessing through different sources of media. Keep it simple. Don't feel like you have to cover everything in one conversation, but pick one thing, and it may be one thing that they're interested or they're willing to start with, and be accessible, be approachable. And there have been times where I literally have had to say, okay, I need to take a break, I'm going to go get a drink of water, and I'll be right back. Or maybe we need to take a break and we can come back and talk about it later. Use correct terms. Some people took a risk and put the slang terms up there. But one of the things that we talk about is with kids is we want to be able to say that's a slang term. Here's the medically accurate term for that. But also to talk about, and we do this with kids, even fourth and fifth graders get, why do we use slang terms for reproductive and sexual health and biology, but we don't use that for other parts of our body or other body systems? So what is it that, what is it about slang terms? And they'll say, well, we're not allowed to talk about it, or it's funny, or I have power. I've had kids say I have power. I can make people feel uncomfortable or embarrassed. Or I can be cool because I'm using a slang term. And what we talk with kids about is that that we want them to use medically accurate information because it shows that we have respect for another person's body and our own body, and also that it prevents harassment and bullying and sexual harassment. And it could be other, relationship violence, but people are more responsible in their conversations when they're using correct terminology and they're not using slang terms. So, what terms do people use at home? So if you take a minute to think about how do we talk about our bodies and do we have slang terms for parts of our bodies, and maybe to revisit, like when they're kids, we talk about that's your pee-pee, or that we use slang terms, and I think also that even high school kids don't always know, especially if they haven't had a health before high school. When we talk about reproductive and sexual biology, they're not even sure how many holes they have, or what comes out of those holes in their body. So urine, feces, menstrual fluids, that kind of thing, or ejaculation and seminal fluids, that honestly, once they know, they're okay with it. Oh, so if we have a conversation with a kid, and I'm saying, what's the cool thing about a scrotum? And they're like, there's something cool about a scrotum? and they look at us, really confused. it kind of takes the power away, and it also normalizes. It's just part of our body, and kids are really excited to learn about the circulatory system and the respiratory system. But if we normalize it and we take the power that can lead to harmful language and behavior, that kids get it, and it just brings the temperature down, and it models for them responsible and respectful conversations. And this is one area where we see even adults don't have necessarily responsible or respectful conversations. And so what's cool about the scrotum is it regulates temperature of the testicles and protects the production of sperm. And so we talk about it, the scrotum loosens up if it's exposed to hot or heat temperature, and it tightens up around the testes if it's cold, if there's cold exposure. And kids are like, oh, and then we talk about, you know, we have them repeat epididymis. And even in the high school level, I got to see the assessment at the middle school level around the sexual health unit. And kids are doing, what's that game where they put the card?
Headband.
The headband game. And so they were working in groups, and the other two students had to give them clues about what the reproductive biology or the function of the epididymis or something like that. And I was so impressed by, they weren't joking around, they weren't being inappropriate. They were like, oh, the epididymis, you know, or the vas deferens, or the vulva, or, you know, they were just like, and there wasn't any difference by gender. They were working in groups to construct models of a person with a penis or a person with a vulva. They were doing crossword and word searches. And I saw it was just a normal kind of conversation, and I only saw respect in the classroom I observed. And it was, you know, ultimately what I've talked about in terms of our goals, we saw it in action, and we want to back up and support parents in also talking about that. Consent is so important that we talk about the pressure to do things, not just sexual in nature, but anything, and what does consent look like for your child? What does it mean to you? And so just asking, you know, I had a conversation with some other parents the other day, we were talking about consent. You know, what does that word mean to you? What does that mean to you? And that can be a conversation where we also can talk about what it means to us and how do you assure that your expectations and your boundaries are listened to, and what do you do if you're in a situation where you're not being respected or you feel like somebody is not listening to your position of no or no thank you in that situation. And we're talking about consent age-appropriate in elementary school because we're also talking about friendships. And what does a good friend look like? Or for some kids, to get to consent, and this is even what middle and high school is, what do you like about your friends? And really, if you don't know your kids' friends, get to know them. And get to know about them. So, you know, that was something that I was always asked. So what do you like about that new friend you have? Or what do you like about that your friend that you are the closest to? Or what is it about the group of friends you hang out that you like or is fun for you? And what's important to you in a friendship? You know, that's a way to get to what's important to you in a romantic relationship as well. How many of you know your kids, your teens' friends? All right, good. I'm glad to see the hands go up. A lot of middle school parents and elementary school parents are like, I think I know my friends. But it's really important to know their friends. If you don't know their parents, you know, introduce yourself, either over the phone or at a gathering where you have the opportunity to meet them. Any questions? Okay. So,
I have a question.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'm curious. The topics that you cover, is screen usage talked about at all, like digital screen usage?
Yeah, we'd like to talk more about it than we have time for. What we found in my time here, time on learning for health has diminished. We used to have a whole semester in 7th grade and 8th grade for middle school, and we used to have more classes in 9th and 11th grade. But it is a topic that we would love to devote more time to, but we do cover it and weave it in where we can. And we are also, the high school's partnering with the tech department, and they're going to come in and do a lesson for the high school health kids. I think 9th grade is when they're planning to do that. And at the elementary level, we partner with the librarians and the tech department. We've created a resource if you have middle school students. The principals sent out a resource with information and even talking points for kids around technology and social media. What I encourage parents is to take control of those devices and put them to bed at night. Lock them in your bedroom or put them in your bedroom or in a charging station at night. You know, there's a curfew for technology. And I know that was important in my house. And also, they had to invite us or include us on their social media sites. And we would monitor those as well. And what was hard is one of my daughters, we said you can't be on Facebook till you're in high school. And the summer before high school, she set up an account, and we found out about it. So, you know, we had to pull back on her cell phone and, you know, computer time, and we had to have some ongoing conversations about that and regain her trust around that. But it's an important topic at home, and it should be ongoing and checking in around that, and also kind of paying attention and talking to other parents, because some parents have more information about what's being posted and talked about. And even in middle school, that's the same way. So I know we asked a few questions about that, but how many of you had conversations when you were teens with a parent or another trusted adult at home about sex? How many of you had conversations? How many of you have had conversations with your child about sex? If you haven't, I would really encourage you to talk about it and to talk about kind of what you've learned to be a resource and say, you know, that if you have questions or you're struggling with decisions around this or you're looking for information, I would love for you to come to me and talk about it, and I will do my best to not be judgmental, not be reactive, because I want to be able to talk about this. And I know as a parent that I had some pretty challenging conversations with my children about it, that they were important. And my kids told me as adults that they really did appreciate that, even though it was tough, to have those conversations. But also to recognize that, you know, one of the good things about what we find is that that Lexington youth are postponing their decision to be sexually active. However, we still have kids that are making a conscious decision or in situations where they may not have totally agreed to that decision, but they engage in sexual activity. And not just intercourse, you know, other sexual activity. And we want to be a resource and be a valid and reliable source for them. And it's okay if you don't know all the answers to their questions. I always say, let's go on this site and look at what this site says about that. or I want to really think thoughtfully about that question before I answer it, especially if it's causing a little, you know, stirring up some things for me, you can postpone answering that question. I also think if they're asking personal questions, it's okay to say, well, I'm not really comfortable sharing that right now, but I'm curious about why it's important for you to know that. And then that can lead to what they're really wondering about. And I have found with my kids that, you know, after they were out of college and we'd be sitting together, you know, at a family dinner, they would say, yeah, Mom and Dad, what's up? You know, are you ever going to tell us what you did as teens? Kind of thing. And I would say, yeah, as soon as you tell me all the things I didn't know that you did as teens, then maybe I'll share with you. So I think what's really important is that most of us, as we can tell by, you know, the few people that answered that they had conversations with their parents, is that we don't have the experience or the knowledge that our kids have now, that we didn't have those opportunities. It was either generational or cultural that our kids really need from us. And so I think that's part of the conversation with our kids is what our own experiences were and what it was like going through puberty and teen years into a young adulthood, because it's important for them. And it allows them to realize that we're there, we're talking to them because we genuinely care, and we want them to have a different experience than we did. I was really fortunate because when I had the movie at school and the talk with our home economics teacher, we didn't have a health teacher at that time, and I was in sixth grade. I came home and I thought, oh good, now my mom and I can talk about it. And so I went upstairs and there was a little booklet on my bed, and I came downstairs, my mom came home, and she said, oh, I see you got the book. And I go, yeah. And she said, your sister says if you have any questions, she's happy to answer them. And I'm like, what? You know, my sister was 5 years older, not always a reliable source and not always making the best decisions. So I'm like, really? You know, I'm the middle child here. I'm like watching what the older siblings are doing and not sure she's the person I want to talk to about it. But my sister was the one who advocated for period products that were my generation and also what I was comfortable with, and so I appreciated that. But when my kids were little, I had the opportunity to have a conversation with my mom, and I said, yeah, what was that about? You know, and she felt terrible. She remembered exactly what happened in that conversation. And she said, you know, when I grew up, no one talked to me about it. And she got her period in third grade, and she went to her mom, and she thought she was dying. And her mom said, oh, you know, this is what it is, here's the period products, and good luck. So didn't really give her a lot of information. She still didn't understand what was happening. And thankfully, her best friend lived nearby, and she went to her friend's house, and her mom explained to her that she was menstruating and what it was and what it looked like and what she would experience. And she said, so for her, she was so worried that she was going to get it wrong, and she wouldn't know how to answer my questions, and that it was one of those things that she always felt bad about. And she said, I'm so glad that your children can have a different experience about that, because I know that I had to navigate things without having my parents at home really being able to have honest conversations with me about anything. It was just, don't do it, and that included drugs and, you know, doing anything illegal or would get me into trouble, and don't have sex. But there was no conversation about how you navigate that with your peers or in a relationship and what consent is, or even a discussion around that. And so I remember in high school or college, I came home and I was really upset because I was working someplace where I felt like I was being sexually harassed, and it was really uncomfortable for me, and I was really upset. And my mom was able to say, that happens to me, and it happens to a lot of women, and I want you to know it's not okay. And I'm really glad you came to me about it. So for that, it was high school and college where I could have that conversation. And I see my daughters, in terms of what voice they have that I didn't even have, as elementary, middle, and high school and college and beyond. And I'm so proud of the things that they faced and taken on. And really, in spite of how awful situations were for them and how painful it was and kind of that re-victimization, they held true to, I'm not going to let that person get away with that. And so I think that is ultimately what we want for our children, is to be advocates for themselves and also to advocate for others. And the more that we're able to take risks, and regardless of whether they're being obnoxious and la, 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 la with us, that we keep bringing it up and we keep taking opportunities to just talk about it. And we don't have to get everything right. It's okay to say, whoops, that wasn't, I made a mistake, and I looked into it, and this is, I want to revisit that conversation, or I'm not sure how to answer that, let me get back to you, or let's see what this resource says online. Look at it together. So I'm going to skip over this, but you'll be able to look at, and I'm going to skip over that because I've covered that. All bodies are good bodies, and I think this is really important in terms of how teenagers view their bodies, and if they understand that their bodies are good and that they can protect those bodies and they can take care of those bodies, and also recognize when something isn't right in their body, and that includes sexual and reproductive systems. And it's okay to joke about the ew or get the sillies or giggles. In fact, there were some high school students in Christy and Taylor's office that were helping write the questions on the chart paper. And I said, yeah, we might have a few sillies and giggles tonight. And they thought that was a hoot, that adults would actually be silly and giggle about these topics. But we have to have a little fun when we're talking about it, and we have to have a sense of humor with our kids. Because that's where their brains are at, but also it allows for more, authentic conversations with them. My husband, who had a rough time the first time that we were having a conversation with our oldest daughter, and he said, that's all yours, I'm not going to get involved. I said, really, I think you know, it's important that you're a part of these conversations. He literally paced outside the room, and my daughter and I could hear him say, oh my God, I can't believe that they're having that. And so my daughter said, I think we should invite Dad in. So we did, and that was a really important moment because they went to their dad for advice. They reached out to them when they were in situations that they were concerned about or felt uncomfortable. They talked to him about injustice for them, for their body, for other people. And he, sometimes we would be like, I can't believe you just said that, or that wasn't the right answer, or that wasn't good advice, but we kept a sense of humor, and he grew, and the girls trusted and used him as an important resource as well. So no one's immune from this conversation, and we want to celebrate the changes that they're going through, and we want to support them, and we want to normalize that the things that they're struggling with are normal things. And what's different is that there are resources, and we are people that they can come and talk about those things with. But I've had kids who say, I just wear a lot of layers of clothes because I don't want people to see the changes in my body or make comments about my breasts or my body, and we were like, well, first of all, if they are, you need to tell somebody, and here's some things that you can say to that person, but you should celebrate your bodies and feel good in the body you're in, and that everybody's bodies are different, and that's okay, and that's important, That kids kind of have some self-doubt and insecurities during their teen years, and believe it or not, when they go off to college, those insecurities come back. So they start to question their bodies, their weight, you know, what they look like, their hair, their face, their skin. And so we want them to be able to come back and talk to us about that so they can have perspective and know that who they are and how they look is just where they should be. But to support them and validate those feelings, because all of those feelings and emotions can come back when they leave home. I think I may have, did I have this slide in here twice? But I think I did. So this, I'm going to send some resources home, are in the email. Catherine, will you send that out to parents? But, you know, we do talk about abstinence with kids, and we talk about the benefits of delaying sexual activity. And by the time we get through sexually transmitted illnesses, the process of pregnancy and childbirth, most of them are like, no, no, thank you. In high school, we have a checklist. It would say, if you can check everything off on this checklist and you're ready to have sex, never had a kid that's been able to do that. In 11th grade included. And so I think, you know, we can share that checklist because it's a way to talk about where you're at around this and what do you need from me in order to feel prepared around that. And so it just has to give you, and if you didn't do this, that's okay. Because you still have the opportunity, even going into college. I put in here some conversation starters. And so, you know, you can talk about what you learned. You can talk about what messages did they get. And that may be including around harassment, sexual harassment and slang terms. Those kinds of things. What do they hear? How do they respond if they see it, they observe it? We also do incorporate active bystander strategies and skills in our health class, and we just did a high school training for high school students. They were trained by other high school students who were trained around active bystandership, and not just around these things, but any harm. They'll be training middle school kids in the spring, and an all-day training, and then we incorporate it into our health classes. But we want to know, how do you respond when you see it, when you're being harmed? What are the different media you learn about health topics? And that might be sex, it might be drugs, or it might be something else. And how do you determine if the source of media is accurate? And I think that's a really important one. Because how many of you can answer yes to this, that my child knows how to access reliable and valid information about different health issues they're faced with? So that's your homework. Is I'll be sending you valid and reliable sources, but take a look at those and share those with your child. Look at them together if they can stand it. And they may be annoyed, but I would force them to anyway. But, you know, so I think that's really important that, that especially based on us all sitting there going guilty around that, that we really, that's an important conversation to have. And that is something we do in health class, is in all our health topics, how do you access reliable and valid sources and what do they look like? And what don't they look like? And so they're learning that through health, through their technology and library classes in younger grades, but certainly in middle school and high school health. That's a big part of it. And really, by 11th grade, we're having them practice, okay, so you're 1 year away from leaving LHS. How will you access valid and reliable resources outside of LHS? And so we let them pick a place of employment or college, and we have them look for the resources at that place of employment or college. My son-in-law works at Deloitte. He is a cybersecurity person, and a consultant, and he works with teams of people around that. But kids sometimes, well, what is this? And I say, oh, my son-in-law works at Deloitte. So they've actually gone on Deloitte's site and looked at human resources and where do I go to around these different things. And also they picked a college or university. And it's fascinating, and there's a lot of aha moments. But I would encourage all of you to do that as well and to really think, where would you go? Ask your child that question. Where would you go if you wanted help information about these different topics? And how do you know if it's reliable or accurate? Because Google search and Wikipedia, they just don't cut it. And they're not reliable and accurate. And sometimes, unfortunately, are the opposite of that. So it's okay for them to look at sources, but we want to make sure they know where to look and how to determine whether it's accurate. And checking with us as adults, as their parents, is one way of checking that resource. And I talked about when your child asks questions and some of the things that you can do. Addressing slang, I'll give you some language. And I'm going to end here because our time is up. But if you have questions, I'm happy to take your questions. But also, if just to know, you're never alone in this. So you can reach out to me. You can reach out to your child's health teacher, to one of our prevention specialists. If you're not sure who to reach out to, shoot me an email, and I'll get back to you. We can set up a time to talk by phone or meet in person, or I can give you the information you need. But please know that we want to be a resource and support, and that we think that partnership is so important in our department with parents and with caregivers. So,
You mentioned sending out some materials. I didn't register for this.
That's okay. They're going to go out through. How did you find out about it?
One of the emails that comes through the high school, you know, that says this is what's happening this week.
I think the high school and the middle school both sent out emails to the PTO, one-off announcements.
So I'll make them available so they can go out and announce this again so that you have access to them.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you don't get it, give me till after vacation. My whole family's coming in, starting tomorrow and Thursday. If I don't get to it tomorrow, I'll have it right on my calendar to do when I return. But if you don't get it after the first week back, reach out to me. It's just a J. Fenn at the Lexington Mod.
Can you send it to me? I'll put it on the PTO website.
All right.
Put it on the top. So there's like the recording today. If people are okay with it, or I can cut out this part, I can just put out that with
just me talking.
Just you talking.
Yeah, that's. I'm fine with you just putting me talking. I wouldn't want anybody to hear
it.
Yeah.
We'll cut that out.
Yes. Christy, remind me, because it's a hype. Can you remind me to also include that checklist? I have a whole list of books and websites. I really try to take into cultural and religious differences, so I try to have some resources that I did my best. And if you know resources that I didn't include, please send them to me and I'll take a look at them. We really want to make sure that this information is all accessible, so I work with our ELL director to also translate documents that might be easier for different people. Please use us as a resource because we care and it's important. And we have a blast with your kids, and they are quite funny, but they are also really able to have serious conversations and really do have questions, and they want valid and reliable information. And we saw from YRBS, they want it from you, but they also trust that they're going to get that through health education.
I wonder if we can ask
to
send it to parents there, and maybe information.
Yeah.
So I think Amanda is going to ask. And so if you send all the information, I can send it to him.
And I can also ask Dana Marlin, or
right.
Do you know how to do parents there? Okay. I'm supposed to learn.
Right.
But not. Because that means I got to sit down. And somebody's got to walk me through step by step. And then it's like, wait, let me write this down, you know. So my kids make fun of me. Mom, you're the slowest texter. Yeah.
Is there a way to get a handle on the curriculum that's being covered in the Hillsdale? Because whatever's being discussed there is being reinforced and connected at home would be good.
I think our goal really is to have like a unit newsletter. But at the beginning of health, all the topics that are covered are sent out. But if you're ever not sure about what's being covered, please reach out to me, and I can talk, you know, I can go through it with all of you. But
you can share it and find it.
So, this is everything. Yeah.
Because we mentioned 6 times of wellness, and when I asked what are the 4 tricks and fix, he's like, oh, I shut down, you know, who's going to listen to all of you? You know, you get all the attitudes.
Yeah.
You really, like, what did you discuss?
So we have, we give them medical and accurate information about all the topics that we cover, but we also are talking with them about decision-making, and they do some small group and large group discussions. They do some activities, like that assessment I told you around the sexual health unit. I was in awe of what I saw, and it was a real statement of what we wanted them to take away from that. They took away and they learned. And they were able to do it in respectful and responsible ways, and also to have fun with it. But they took it really serious, and I'm like, wow, you know, look at you. You're 7th and 8th graders. And so, you know, it's kind of, I couldn't tell you every detail of every lesson, but I certainly can put out an overview and, yeah, what we cover under each unit.
Well, I think
it's
your email address again.
It's JFenn, F-E-N-N, so it's Julie Fenn, at lexingtonmod.org.
Thank you.
I was going to say that, clearly this is like a spiraling curriculum, right? They get some in middle school, they get it in 9th grade, they get it in 11th grade. So I think I would just have loved to have seen, like, this is, these are the topics we're covering in middle school. This is 9th grade, this is 11th grade, because the conversations we're going to get.
Yeah, so it does go home in the letter when health starts. In fact, the trimester just started, and in January the 9th graders will start health. So everything is listed in there, all the topics and what we focus on in that letter. There's a lot of information in that letter that comes home. But and now we have K-5 health education back. It was eliminated in 2006. The superintendent didn't think health education was important, and he had to make some shifts in budget, so elementary health was eliminated, which is a real bummer. We've had to fight to get it back. We got that back a couple years ago because we used the youth risk behavior survey, and what kids were telling us to really show the data about why kids need this. But I can also send out another overview if people do not get that from the letter that goes
home. It's hard in the beginning of the year.
It is.
Inundated
with
stuff.
Yeah.
And then you're like,
yeah. And then it's halfway through the year and you get an email. It's like, oh, help, you know.
Yeah.
That's good. You know, I'm glad to hear they're having it. But thank you again. And I'll be here a few minutes if you have any more questions.
Thank you.
So thanks everyone for coming out.
We can put it like through Maven.